welcome to Stay Cool Forever,
the podcast where we are revisiting some 90s classics to see how well they hold up from a 2019 lens. Gonna look at things like if they're dated, check out the soundtrack, see if they're problematic or no longer relevant. A lot of weird technologies or lack thereof in some of these, so really just two dudes talking about, in this week, classic cinema. We're doing Goodfellas.
Ooh.
Martin Scorsese, 1990.
Martin Scorsese, the Italian drama. Very well. And so the last 2 weeks, so first we started out with Schindler's List, Spielberg, and then we went on to Fargo by the Coen brothers. And as we'd said, we're doing Martin Scorsese, his Goodfellas, which is an interpretation of a book. But before we get into that, I'm Zach.
I'm Wade.
And I just wanted to let everyone know that you can check us out now officially on YouTube.
Yay!
Just search Stay Cool number forever, and we're on there. We're also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Overcast, Windows Media Player, Bose, you know, catch us pretty much everywhere you want, as well as Podmust, where we're the
number one comedy
podcast, and we're number 7th in the Podmust world of all podcasts. So thank you everyone out there.
Yeah, thank you listeners.
Yeah, you can email us at staycoolforever@gmail.com, and that's four as in F-O-U-R. We're also on Twitter as Stay Cool Forever. You can search us there.
Is that number four on Twitter?
That's a great question.
I think we just got this going.
Yeah,
it's about to blow up, so we want to give you accurate information for once.
Great idea. Great idea. So, you know, I don't have it linked, so stay tuned. You can email, you can Twitter me at LA Zachary K until then. Yeah, you know, again, I would just like to say that what a fun ride this has been. And today is actually the day of the Oscars. We'll get this podcast out a week afterwards.
That's right. So the Oscars will have been last week. We don't know who the winners are.
Who knows? I'm going to stake my claim now and say I swear to God, if it's A Star Is Born or the Queen movie, I'm going to be pissed.
I don't think it's going to be the Queen movie. I bet A Star Is Born is going to win some stuff. I bet the most interesting part will be seeing Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper perform a song from it live.
Oh, are they going to?
Yeah.
No, I had no idea.
That'd be fun. I heard he actually showed up at a couple of her live shows to do that.
Okay.
To have fun, you know, because he learned guitar and
he's a
how
singer
to sing.
Now. He's an artist. Here comes a country record.
Hey, do you know who his consultant was on playing that part in the movie?
Doug Carrion.
Close. Not really. Eddie Vedder. There was some quote from an article I read where he, yeah, because, you know, he's like a timely but like a bit of a solo musician.
Okay.
Now.
Oh, yeah, he is actually.
And he was like, I'm going to sing in my own movie. And Eddie Vedder's like, don't do that. Why would you do that?
Yeah. Ugh.
Weather. Is that a Pearl Jam fan?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I was. I'm just not anymore. Every time I try to give Pearl Jam a go, I just can't. I just think of that Portlandia episode when the guy's got the Eddie Vedder tattoo and Carrie Brownski's got to break up with him because she just can't stand the horrible Eddie Vedder tattoo. And that's just kind of how I feel. Segway. Seinfeld bass. There it is. Oscars. Goodfellas. Goodfellas was met with extremely enthusiastic reviews. It was overshadowed by Kevin Costner's Dances with Wolves.
Yes, that movie cleaned up that year.
What? That's awesome. Yeah, I totally forgot. We were talking before last week that we would consider Western movies.
Yeah,
and so that should maybe be on our list. And so the only Oscar they won was fucking Joe Pesci. Best Supporting Actor, and he had the shortest Oscar acceptance speech ever.
What'd he say?
It's my privilege. Thank you.
Nice.
And that seems very Pesci-esque.
Oh, sure. It's a rarity.
Yeah.
He had an interesting career.
Okay, break it down.
Well, he retired in 99, which is why we haven't really seen him.
Oh, officially retired?
That much. Yeah, retired from acting. He's done a couple cameos here and there, like that Snickers commercial.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he, you know, he was friends with Frankie Valli. He kind of helped parlay their career.
Is that why that Frankie Valli came up in the movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Someone says, like, who do you think you are? A big shot like Frankie Valli?
Frankie Valli?
When Karen is yelling at Henry.
Wow, interesting. That's actually really interesting. You know, on the topic of Frankie Valli, one of our former administrating artists, Severio, mm-hmm. Produced a bunch of music for Frankie Valli.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we might be a bacon away from Pesci then.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, he started really young. He was acting when he was like 5 and 10. And
really?
He did music too. Like, he really... I think that's why he retired. He wanted to focus more on music.
That's a shame.
But he had two albums 30 years apart. There was Little Joe Sure Can Sing in 1968. And then in 98, he did Vincent LaGuardia Gambini Sings Just For You. And a lot of that stuff, I checked it out once, is very, like, Italian shtick, kind of, you know, doing a play on his My Cousin Vinny character, just, like, really leaning into racial stereotypes.
I wish he had never done My Cousin Vinny, because it comes across, just everything he does is My Cousin Vinny. I can't get that image out of my mind.
Yeah.
As good as this movie is, I just think, hey, that's My Cousin Vinny right there, you know?
Well, he always, like, does that, you know, wise guy... really volatile, mm-hmm. impatient, short fuse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he plays that character so well in so many things, but that's kind of all I can think of him as.
Yeah, poor little guy.
Like, what else? He did Home Alone 1 and 2.
Oh, this is our second Pesci.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he was in some of the Lethal Weapons, I think. He was like the goofy ride-along guy for Riggs and Murtaugh.
Jesus, I don't remember.
I think in Lethal Weapon 2 and 3. I haven't revisited those in forever.
Isn't that Mel Gibson?
Yep.
Yeah.
And Danny Glover.
That's why, probably.
Yeah, kind of hard to go back and enjoy some of those. What with the heavy anti-Semitism
The heavy anti-Semitism really turned me off. I'll never support that man again.
It's funny, though. You said Dances with Wolves. Like, that was Kevin Costner's Braveheart, basically.
Yeah.
In the same way.
Is Kevin Costner an anti-Semite?
No.
Oh, okay.
I just meant, like, it was his... I think he directed it, and it won a lot of awards.
Okay.
A sweeping period piece. No.
Did Gibson directed Braveheart?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, they cleaned up with that one, too.
I mean, you know, credit where credit's due, Braveheart was an excellent movie.
Yeah, one of my favorites as a kid.
I'd go back to it for the sake of this,
mm-hmm.
But not out of my way. That minor moment there when I thought Kevin Costner was an anti-Semite, I also jumped straight to D. Quaid as being an anti-Semite, which would have broken my heart.
Oh, man.
Because Kevin Costner always reminds me of, like, a more rugged version of Dennis Quaid.
Okay.
You know, and those are the mental leaps I'm making in my mind, and
mm-hmm.
I was hurt again because I thought Dennis Quaid was an anti-Semite on top of Kevin Costner, but I don't think either of them are.
So that's Pesci. Peaked with his supporting actor win and otherwise had a interesting kind of career.
Yeah, I mean, and he was great in this movie.
But that was the only award that he
ever gotten.
That it even... No, for the movie.
Yeah, the movie I got, yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting because you think of it, you know, I think everybody's probably heard the name of the movie if they haven't seen
mm-hmm.
it. You're at least aware of it.
It's funny, this morning I saw a kid riding a skateboard with a Goodfellas shirt.
Wow.
Yeah, and I thought, there you go. You know, it's along the lines of Scarface, just not as gangster, you know?
Because obviously this movie really kind of glamorizes the crime life.
Yeah.
That was kind of my takeaway, was that this was crime porn for, like, younger men to enjoy.
Yeah, that nails it. That definitely nails it. I mean, they make the idolization of being a gangster that Ray Liotta had is all of us as we watch this movie.
Mm.
And you know, I'm not going to lie, I grew up loving The Godfather, Casino, Goodfellas, Scarface, and so this was fun for me, and I did have this deification, if you will, of these crime movies, but
mm-hmm.
we got to watch Casino at some point, but currently I think this is the worst of all of the Scorsese crime movies, Italian crime movies.
Okay, I'll bite. Why do you say that?
Because Godfather 1 is only topped by Godfather 2.
Mm-hmm.
And...
That was Coppola, though. Same shit. But
yeah,
the Godfather 3 came out the same year as this movie, so we definitely already had, like, the long-winded dramatic mob
movies.
You're
right. I'm just swapping in Italians in my mind.
I confuse it too.
Yeah. Like
the whole time. I watched The Godfather for the first time with you a few months ago.
That's right.
And I thought it was Scorsese the whole time.
Yeah. God damn. Well.
Raging Bull, Taxi Driver.
Those are Scorsese?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's a De Niro man.
This is still the worst then.
Mm-hmm.
Raging Bull and Taxi Driver are fucking phenomenal.
Agreed.
Departed was good.
It was fine.
You know, not the same sort of gravity as this one.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
I got them confused. It had been so long since I saw this. Mm-hmm. I thought I had remembered the movie of Henry being kind of a Donnie Brasco, like a narc the whole time.
Oh,
like I thought the feds got him way earlier, but obviously that doesn't happen until the very end.
Interesting.
Because like Departed, yeah. I'm pretty, and then like Leo's the mole the whole time.
The whole time.
Okay.
Which is the turn. Spoiler alert.
Eh.
Who cares? If you haven't seen it by now.
Yeah, Departed.
Yeah, the Come Departed. I guess let's start. Who is your favorite character?
I like De Niro a lot, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
He was really understated. I remembered him being more heavily featured in the movie, but he very much plays a supporting role brilliantly,
mm-hmm.
but he's not in it a ton.
And it's interesting you say that, because leading up to watching this movie and then watching it, the whole time I was waiting for fucking casino scenes.
Me too.
Literally.
Okay, there's a Pesci movie where he like stabs a guy in the neck with a pen. Is that Casino?
It's Casino. I thought it was this one.
I was waiting for it.
He
definitely like kills a waiter, you know?
No, yeah, he does that.
Once or twice even, but...
No, yeah, the whole time. And like you said about De Niro, I was waiting for De Niro to have the main role, despite it being Ray Liotta's, you know, story. And I realized, oh my God, that's Casino.
Mm-hmm.
Which
for me made it better, because De Niro, you know, he's done like Meet the Fockers, he's on SNL now, he's definitely parlayed his age into more comedic roles of being the parody of the tough guy that he was, and this is one of those movies where he was authentically playing that character.
Yes.
And because it was in a supporting role, every time he really, you know, and he's like, where's my fucking money, you got money for commercials, more, give me my, like, there's so much intensity. He's just, he killed it.
He's just so ruthless in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wasn't in it the whole time, you get this feeling of, that's just a ruthless guy, because you only see him pretty much be ruthless.
Yeah.
Who directed Casino? Do you know? Coppola?
Scorsese. Yeah, yeah, okay. Cape Fear, Raging Bull, Casino, Taxi Driver, all Robert De Niro movies.
Interesting.
Scorsese did.
What about Heat? Who did Heat? Do you know? I'll look it up.
Please do. Meanwhile, this was based on a true story. The mm-hmm. writer of the book and the screenwriter, Nicholas Pileggi, wrote the book Wise Guy, Life in a Mafia Family in 1985. And he also wrote the screenplay for Casino.
I'm not going to lie to you. I completely forgot what the fuck I was looking up.
So did I. Who directed a movie?
Yeah, it's definitely a director of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Not Heat. Casino. Heat. There it is.
Because we're talking about doing this one for our L.A. Movies Month.
That's right. Heat's the send-off for Val Kilmer. Michael Mann.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's the one where they're trying to make Val Kilmer the next guy in this line of mm-hmm. Italian gangsters.
Yeah, they really hyped that movie as three legends. Mm-hmm. De Niro, Pacino, and Val Kilmer.
That's right.
Yeah, kind of had peaked at that point and apparently was very difficult to work with, and his career... derailed a little bit.
He's an asshole.
Probably. That's what I hear.
I've heard that.
He was one of my favorites, though. Willow.
Oh, fucking Willow. Wow.
So good.
Nice. You just got the sickest refs, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this movie was based on a book, mm-hmm. right? And it was supposed to be called Wise Guys, right? But they had to change it.
The movie was originally going to be called Wise Guys?
Goodfellas is based on Wise Guys. The title of Pileggi's book was changed to Goodfellas because it had already been used for a TV series and for Brian De Palma's comedy, Wise Guys. So, apparently, most of the book, right, is based on a true story. And the book follows the film pretty well, except for the fact that Tommy is based on Tommy DeSimone in the movie. And Tommy's last name is never mentioned, but it's DeVito in the closing credits.
Mm-hmm.
And he's played by Pesci. Tommy's shown as a small man with a violent temper as being someone older than Henry Hill, Ray Liotta. When Tommy and Henry first meet, they're both teenagers, whereas in reality, DeSimone stood over 6 feet tall, and he was several years younger than Henry, disappearing when he was only 29.
Huh.
Yeah, and when Tommy Henry and Jimmy Robert De Niro were on their way to bury Billy Batts, Tommy was driving, not Henry, which I think is like a
splitting hairs. But they were all there, right?
Mm-hmm. And it was Tutty, not Tommy, who wanted Henry to come with him on the double date.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
Which adds a little fun stuff there. And apparently, the real Tommy, he just vanished, and no one knows how he was killed. So the scene where Tommy's actually shot and the line about Tommy's mother not being able to have an open coffin are both fictional.
Okay. He did just vanish, though.
Yeah.
Right? So we can probably assume he got that whacked.
Yeah, absolutely. The major change in the film adaptation, apparently, is that Tommy isn't a main character in the book. He's only mentioned in it, but is still regarded as a violent killer. And several of the characters' names are changed, obviously. And the film also omits Henry's enlistment in the army in 1960, where he served for 3 years.
Huh.
And in the army, he continued to run schemes and made several connections he used after he was discharged.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
He was such a good businessman.
Yeah. Minus the good businessman, he's a schemer like Billy McFarlane.
Yep.
Constantly.
Yeah, except his numbers add up.
Just a little piece of trivia. Do you remember the scene when the drug mule girl, I think Tracy, was her name Tracy?
His mistress. Sure.
No, the girl who would take the coke on tape to her legs.
Oh, she went the Lucky Hat Girl.
Lucky Hat Girl, yeah. There you go. You remember when they were talking about her, they had her itinerary booklet and there was a black bar over the itinerary?
Yeah.
So apparently Warner Brothers didn't receive permission to use the airline's logo in the film because American Airlines ticket and the company didn't want to be affiliated with illegal operation depicted in the movie.
Oh, I wondered what that was.
Yeah, me too.
Is there a picture of dick on that?
Just random nudity I don't get in the video file.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
I wonder if there are rare copies out there that don't have the black bar.
On the topic of different versions... rare copies. Apparently the TV version, and I couldn't find it. I searched for like 30 minutes trying to find the TV cut version of this movie, because in the opening, Scorsese comes out and gives a little monologue about the movie or something.
For the TV version?
For the TV version.
To tell audiences, like, this is bullshit.
I don't know.
They censored my brilliance.
Yeah, I have no idea. I needed to know, and I couldn't find it.
Huh. It's got to be out there.
So, if anyone happens to find it, definitely.
Yeah, after checking us out
way.
On YouTube, hop over, take a search for that, see if you can find it. Send us a link.
Please. Stay cool forever, FOUR, @gmail.com.
So, you had seen this before?
Yes. I was probably 8, 10-ish.
Had you seen it since, or have you seen it a couple times, or was it just a one and done?
No, I've seen it a handful of times.
Okay.
Which is why this movie blends in with Casino so much, because I saw Casino a lot at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
In my formidable, puberty years, my stepdad was very into Italian movies like this, the crime movies, and so I've seen them all a lot.
Yeah.
The one scene that hits me every time where I go, oh, yeah! I know, like, I don't know what it is, but that Christmas scene after the Lufthansa heist, I've seen that scene a million times. And I had weird deja vu where I felt like I had dreamed seeing the scene,
because
maybe I was thinking about doing the podcast. I don't know. That scene is just emblazoned in my brain.
Same. I've only seen this once, and
really?
Maybe like if it was on TV, I might have caught a scene here and there. But that one is very familiar to me, too, and I don't know why.
It's the pink car. What the fuck are you doing buying the fucking pink car?
Yeah.
I told you to not buy anything.
Because he just pulled off the heist, and everyone's happy about it, and they're playing that Happy Christmas song, but he's just, like, berating everyone for flashing their cash.
Yeah.
Like...
it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that particular heist is still unsolved?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder if the book or anyone ever gave credit or took credit for it.
Well, having not read the book, I don't know, but I assume that they posit that it was Jimmy Conway's idea in the book, but no one knows.
Huh. So at least everybody kept their mouth shut about that.
Yeah. And you think they would have come up when Henry was turning?
Well, I figured that was the whole point of the trial, like, getting him to rat on them.
Apparently it wasn't about that.
Wow. That was odd to me, too, thinking, what was the Don's name? Paulie
Cicero.
Yeah, he didn't want anybody dealing with drugs because the sentencing was much higher, had a higher probability.
And they move up the line.
Yeah, you definitely have people like trading information for mm-hmm. shorter sentences.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he didn't want it. But then when Henry gets caught for doing drugs, that's his own thing. That's like entirely his side project. But somehow the law uses that to be like, but you used to be connected to the mob, yeah. or you are connected to the mob. So I assumed they were going for the Lufthansa.
I
thought they were trying to solve that heist, but that's interesting that they never did.
It's very, very curious. And that U.S. Marshal that Henry and Karen are talking to at the end,
mm-hmm.
that's the real U.S. Marshal, apparently. That
oh, not an actor?
Took him in, yeah.
The guy?
That's like the guy.
Wow. And he still seemed pretty young, so yeah. I wonder.
Yeah,
I guess when did they get arrested? Like in the 80s? Like 1980 or something?
It was the 80s, so. Okay. Who knows, man? I don't know, but I thought that was definitely a very interesting take there. Furthermore, Henry, in real life, he got booted out of the witness protection program.
Really? What for?
He couldn't give up the life.
Oh, yeah? No, yeah. Wait, I read something that after he was in it, he was running another con.
Yeah.
Like, with his new identity.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, again, I think some people are just born with this in them.
Mm-hmm.
They just got to go out and be cons.
Yeah.
Do jobs and shit.
Just addicted to it.
And he ended up dying of old age, though.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
Yeah, and he in an interview he was saying that, you know, they were like, isn't it crazy that you made it this long? He goes, honestly... Yeah.
Right.
I didn't think I was going to make it this long. And so that in and of itself is kind of a mystery. Like, everyone was in jail. Yeah. You know, what fuck happened? Why didn't they have this guy whacked?
Yeah. Like, the one rat who got to go to witness protection, blow his cover, and still...
Yeah!
I guess there were no loose threads or vengeful, like, kids in the family that wanted to hunt this fucker down.
When Goodfellas came out, he was going to screenings as, I'm Henry. I'm like fucking guy, and like he didn't get killed or nothing.
Like he set up a 3-card Monty table outside the theater. No, like I'll sign your ticket stubs, $20.
It's crazy, man. And so he was out there telling everyone, "I'm the fucking guy," and he made some money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, his interviews were worth $550,000 from the movie people.
Wow.
Because he was a part of the movie making it.
Yeah,
and they paid him, you know, $500,000 for that, and then he made more money setting up Monty tables and mm-hmm. signing autographs.
Wow, that's just crazy.
Yeah.
Do you think that these movies, like The Godfather and Goodfellas and Casino, sort of outed the mob? Like, I don't know any people that are connected, so I don't know how the mob operates in modern times. But I feel like making all these movies about it had to put them on the radar. Like, wasn't there some story about The Godfather that they, like, members of the mafia tried to intimidate the production because they didn't want their secret out there?
Did I make that up? I don't know. I haven't heard that. But what I do know is that when James Comey was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, he was taking down parts of the mob. And so I wonder, you know, I think the mob was already a big thing. You know, and it had been going for years. But I think it probably got major attention once these big cases started happening. Mm. And I don't have the time to... You search fucking Comey and Mob Boss and all you get is political shit. So
yeah.
It's hard to get a factual answer here. Maybe. I know that in this movie that a bunch of the... A bunch of the side actors, like the B actors all in mm-hmm. it, were actual guys in the mob.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Scorsese wanted to get, you know, real wise guys in the movie.
You think Scorsese's in the mob?
Yes.
He's got like a Frankie Valli thing going on?
I definitely think he is.
Sinatra.
Yeah, a definite Sinatra thing going on where, you know, they hooked him up with, you know, maybe Coppola's in the mob. And he hooked up Scorsese.
I could see it. These are wild theories. I hope none of them listen, because we're on to them. We're cracking this wide open.
Yeah, we're on to you guys. We're at 113. Just kidding.
Fake Street.
Fake Street. Just going to give him David's address. David's you've heard him in one episode. He's my best friend. So if the mob's going for you, if the mob's coming after us, I'll give you his address. He's the mastermind.
So, obviously, this movie jumps through history a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really do the 90s-isms like you would for other movies, but I did think it was interesting how they tried to mark the passage of time in this. Because I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. Well, they really stick with, like, a, you know, golden oldies doo-wop-y kind of, like, glorious 50s, 60s, like, lots of old.
Yeah.
And then He Kissed Me, Frankie Valli songs, which... I'm not going to lie, like, wore on me a little bit at first.
Interesting.
I was like, are we going to get past this?
I'm glad you brought this up, because I have a paragraph I lifted from mentalfloss.com. So, Scorsese played a specific set of rules when picking the soundtrack, from Tony Bennett's Rags to Riches over the opening narration to the Sex Pistols' punk rock take on My Way. Over the closing credits, Scorsese's use of music is frequently mentioned as one of the many reasons why Goodfellas is a classic.
Hmm.
And of course, Derek and the Dominoes' Layla piano exit after the discovery of Jimmy Conway's Lufthansa Heist Carnage is frequently cited as one of the best uses of popular music in movie history. While the genres included run the gamut, Scorsese abided by a set of rules when picking songs, and they are: they had to at least vaguely comment on the scene or characters, and they had to be chronologically appropriate to the time and the scenes they were set in. So, I agree with you. Because it's like, okay, you know... Nice, more of the same shit, you know, but you got the one Hendrix song, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the only, and there was a Rolling Stones.
I think, I don't know who does it, that Sunshine of Your Love. The
Oh, Cream.
Yes.
Clapton, yeah.
Yeah, there's like that. There was a Harry Nilsson song.
There was a Harry Nilsson song.
Upbeat one. So yeah, they did touch on it a bit with the music.
Mm-hmm.
But like visually, I think nowadays people really relish the period piece stuff and try to get very specific with everything.
Yeah.
You know, if you watch a movie like Stranger Things, like somehow these kids were wearing all the coolest shit and had posters of all the coolest bands that are still, you know, classic.
Yeah.
Like everybody's got a Police and David Bowie poster and instead of like Corey Hart or some fuck off act that like...
The fucking thing about Stranger Things is that theme. The theme to Stranger Things is so perfectly 80s.
It's like John Carpenter.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Except that band is from now.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name of the band, but I bought one of their vinyl, and they sent me a handwritten note thanking me for buying the vinyl.
Oh.
And it's just four guys on synths. Like, that's what they do. So I think to that... And where we're all trying to, where shows now like Stranger Things try to nail the period stuff.
Mm.
There were a lot of people now who also were trying to nail the earlier stuff, like these musicians.
Yeah.
You know, which is interesting because why go back and create a certain sound and they found the perfect niche and that was Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought like for the 50s, 60s stuff, they definitely did nail it visually, old cars, fashion, music and everything. And I definitely felt like the vision was way more solid and specific for, like, the first two acts.
Okay.
And then with the passage of time...
Yeah, it does go off the fucking rails, even in story, too.
Mm-hmm. But, like, it still has the look and feel of it. It's just sweatier and dirtier and more frantic because shit's starting to go wrong. And, like, I guess you get some, you know, weird decorum, like, awful 80s kitchen. Or that weird fucking, like, Tim Burton mirror in the bedroom when they're fighting.
Yeah,
like,
the diagonal mirror.
Yeah, just, like, a few little awful, like, you know, dashes of timeliness. But maybe, you know, it was 1990, so maybe we weren't far enough away from it to...
Okay.
To really hit the nail on the head with some of that stuff.
I get that. I definitely get that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there wasn't very much 90-isms, is how we went on this way.
Mm-hmm.
There was homophobic slurs.
So many slurs. I think it's a Scorsese thing. Do you... I mean, I wrote down a couple. Is there anything...
I didn't write down the homophobic slurs. Okay. You know, and then the line where they... You know, Fridays are for the girlfriends and Saturday are for the wives. They're out with their girlfriends on Friday, and they're talking about Sammy Davis, and the girl goes, "You could see why a white girl would fall for him."
Mm-hmm.
And
that was like a really awkward social rules kind of scene there.
Yeah. Well, and so that's what's crazy is they're having this duality of cheating on their wives and then getting pissed at the white girl for talking about, you know, being interested in a black man.
Yeah. Be careful. People might hear you. Like,
yeah.
It's uncouth in the Italian community to talk about being attracted to black men.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, what it is, if it's an Italian thing or...
I don't know.
or if Scorsese just likes to include racism, sexism, homophobia in his movies, because hey, that's the truth, man. Like, it's not like people weren't racist.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, whatever, like, you know, could you believe that? Like, a Jew broad being prejudiced against Italians.
Yeah.
Like, they use the N-word several times. And have you seen Taxi Driver recently?
Not recently.
There is a scene where Martin Scorsese plays a passenger in the cab.
Yeah.
And it's really awkward. And he's like, park here. You know, like, see that window up there? Like, a black guy lives there, but he's using the N-word. And he's my wife's up there, like, and I'm going to kill him. And it was, like, it was so bizarre and, like, a little amusing.
Was it necessary?
When I was younger watching it. And that's what I'm saying. If it's, like, is this, like, a Quentin Tarantino thing where we're sort of, like, well, racism's real, so I want to be authentic, but also kind of, like, grinningly, maybe overdoing it a little bit.
It's almost, like, voyeuristic in a way.
Yeah.
But
I get
really.
Yeah. I get that it's, like, provocative and raw and, like, oh, yeah, we're, like, doing a rated R movie.
Push the envelope for sake.
Sure, but is it necessary?
I don't think that would have either made it more real or less real. I mean, I get it, but it didn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm. On a certain level, I can appreciate that sort of thing because it's, you know, whatever. Like, America's got tons of fucking, racism issues.
Yeah.
So to pretend they didn't exist in, like, the 60s and 70s... particularly among the mobsters, might have been inauthentic, but how much is too much? How much do you need?
Yeah, well, that Taxi Driver scene really, really makes it seem like, okay.
It reminded me of the Quentin Tarantino Pulp Fiction, which we're doing next week, where he's like, do I have a sign on my garage that says dead N-word storage on it? And he just, like, has a monologue scene where he's kind of...
Oh,
over...
Tarantino himself.
Yeah. Where he's like...
Oh my God, you're right.
And yeah, and Scorsese did it too. So what is that? What is that about?
Yeah, what is going on there?
It's like, what, I'm making a movie where I'm playing a racist person who gets to say it, but it's not me, it's the character, but... Did the movie need it?
Why be tongue-in-cheek about it?
Yeah.
If you didn't feel that way.
Like, it's easier when you've got slave owners or, you know, like some, like a bad guy just, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense in Django, but in fucking Pulp Fiction, not really.
I don't know. I guess it's, like, fair because they're racist and homophobic and sexist against everyone.
Everybody, yeah.
Like Frankie the
Frankie the, yeah.
Yeah. That.
Did you, I wrote down my favorite name, by the way. Did you happen to write a favorite name down?
I loved that scene, but no, I couldn't write them all down.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, let's open that up. That first scene when he's going around talking about everybody and saying the names, and they're like, hey, how are you? You know,
breaking the fourth wall, looking right at the camera. Hey, guy.
Yeah, that was awesome. But my favorite name is Johnny Roast Beef. That's the name. You know, if I had a choice... I'd like to be Zachy Rubin or something like that, you know?
Nice.
If we're doing sandwiches, I want to be the Rubin.
Okay.
That's a fucking sandwich.
All right. I'm trying to think of what I would want to be called.
Okay. You got a favorite sandwich?
It's patty melt.
Weighty patty melt.
I blew it.
It's okay.
They're going to call me that forever.
I might.
It's like school. I'm stuck with this fucking nickname.
I loved the sliding title cards.
That whole opening scene, like, trunk, stab a guy, crazy red lighting, freeze frame.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be a gangster. Song, credits. It's like...
It's good.
There's real strong, visual and pacing aspects to this.
Yes.
And that scene where everybody, you know, the weird names where everybody's getting introduced. They did that a handful of times that I really appreciated. The long tracking shots.
Uh-huh.
Like, this sort of thing is super popular today.
Yeah,
like,
the whole
Birdman Battle
Man
of the
effect.
Bastards. Yeah, Birdman. Yeah. But, a much older version of that. Like, when he's taking the back entrance to the club where he gets the front table, like, most of that is one continuous shot. And they, you know, they do it, like, a dozen times in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that particular scene where he's going in the back of the club, you know, there are times when you don't even see the passage of the money that he's giving everybody, and then you see him tuck it away otherwise.
Yeah.
And that's just spot on acting and filming, and it's just... I love that kind of shit, and I think that might be one of the main draws to these types of movies, is there's a lot of that.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of world building, where you really feel like you're there, and yeah, camera work, lighting, setting, like, all that stuff is great. It really puts you in the scene.
You know, Scorsese seems to like that red light effect a lot.
Is there another example?
Well, in Taxi Driver, for sure. There's a lot of the stoplight colors as he's driving, or the cigarette colors. And then in this movie, when they were re-digging up the body.
That amused me. For, probably because I'm a sick fuck, but like...
It's good. It's good stuff, having to redig that shit up.
We gotta go dig up the body, and like Ray Liotta's vomiting, and the other guys are laughing at him. Like, we're gonna go to my mom's afterwards. She's cooking this.
Peppers and sausage. The thing that really tainted this movie for me was that I spent the whole time waiting for Pesci to die. I can't not watch this movie and not think you're gonna die when you think you're a made man.
Yeah.
Spoiler, you should be following along. You should watch him before you
watch
listen
him and then
us.
Listen.
Yeah.
But no, I watched this one with my wife, and she called that from a mile away. Like, the first time I saw it, I was very surprised. I should have seen it, because he's volatile, and they even say, you know, someone should put a bullet in him. Like, no, I'm sorry I said that.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, in watching this one as an adult, and, you know, it's been years since I've seen it, they totally fucking allude to him getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
He breaks every goddamn rule.
And kills a made man.
Yeah. You know, and there's a lot of exposition from Ray Liotta saying that he's basically going to get killed. I didn't write it down, but there's an early scene where they're talking, where Ray Liotta is talking about how basically if you fuck up, you're going to get killed. And then it just becomes more present after Pesci's been killed. But they totally fucking allude to it early on. And it's something that Pesci does very, very early on. I'm a fuck up for not writing it down, but moving on.
Okay, I want to go back to you saying that this was maybe one of Scorsese's weaker entries.
Yeah.
And sort of talk about why I thought that was, and maybe see if you were having a similar feeling. As I mentioned, I thought it was a lot like... crime porn for younger men to enjoy. And I enjoyed the shit out of it when I was younger in that Scarface kind of way, because you're seeing people challenging all kinds of authority and succeeding in really like glamorous ways.
Not to end you here, the best scene for me in Scarface is when he's at the restaurant and he loses it and he goes, I'm a bad fucking guy, huh? Well, you know what? Everyone needs a bad fucking guy, okay? I'm a bad fucking guy. And that's the best scene in that movie, because we already know he's a fucking scumbag. But because he knows it, it weirdly makes it okay.
Yeah.
You know, it endears me to him being a bad guy.
Sure.
Maybe
in like a martyr kind of way, where it's like, someone's got to do it, and I'm taking that burden on.
Yeah, which is a weird, like, I'm rooting for the bad guy. And that's what's so interesting about this movie, is where Liotta, you know, he goes, you know...
I go to the movies, I'm rooting for the bad
guy. Yeah, Jimmy roots for the bad guy, and it's like...
That's what this movie is.
Yes.
We're supposed to be rooting for the bad guys.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe that was my problem at this age, is that I have a harder time rooting for the bad guys... Perhaps because in a story I demand a little more pathos from my heroes.
And so we talked about this with Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Rooting for the bad guy. I think it plays well. I think we like rooting for a bad guy, but we want to root for a bad guy who has some sort of pathos, as you said.
Yeah.
Not just pure bad guys.
Because, like, look, okay, Breaking Bad, Walter White, you know, has cancer and is forced into the situation and then starts to relish in it. But Ray Liotta, it's just, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a gangster because these guys got respect and they could park where they wanted and people were nice to their mothers. I was like, okay, but you weren't really against the ropes. He had an abusive father.
Yeah.
But the idea that this, you know, half Italian, like, you know, white kid from Jersey couldn't have done something else, you know. I mean, like, I don't want to say he's a bad seed, but like you said, the real life guy was still running cons and witness protection.
Yeah,
like, there was something in his DNA that demanded this sort of control.
Yes. So is that your main reason why you think it's Scorsese's weakest attempt?
I guess so, because when you look at things like Taxi Driver or Raging Bull or whatever, you have you're getting perspective through these very unique individuals who are troubled in their own kind of ways. And Ray Liotta's character, the focal point of this movie, wasn't so much troubled as just he made a choice. Like, I want to be a wise guy. The glamorization of these things has a numbing effect after a while.
Well, yeah, and we've been at these kinds of movies for a long time, and we've been digesting these kinds of tropes for a long time.
Yeah. But you there's know. That line, whereas, like, with Schindler's List, had the numbing effect, but it was still, you know, there were stakes, there was empathy... mm-hmm. for what was happening, whereas in this, you're not really caring about the victims because you're seeing it from the bad guy's point of view, like Maury, fucking wig guy who talked too much.
Well, they made Maury look like a fucking, hey, where's my fucking money? I need my money, and just a squeaky wheel, and on the topic of Maury, actually, did you notice in the commercial run that we saw?
Of his wig shop commercials? Yeah.
And I'm going to take this one step further. My favorite part of this whole movie are all the candid shots, all of the diegetic stuff, like the commercial for Maury, you know, or the party Polaroids.
That was good stuff.
That's got to be so much fun for them, because they probably were just partying taking these photos.
Yeah.
At least I would hope so.
Like, we're going to take you to some nice beachside, restaurant. Just have a good time. We'll take pictures.
Yes. But
it's fun storytelling, too. To kind of gloss over the good days
or whatever. It makes it sort of documentary.
Yeah. You get a sense of those people and their lives, and these are the photos they took.
And that's what I think sets this movie above a little bit from other movies, but not as good as his best movie.
Yeah.
To that end, the whole Maury's wig commercial. Did you notice how he says, they don't even come off when you jump in the pool? And he jumps in the pool, and the next edit, his hair is fucking dry.
Not even wet, yeah. And my wife pointed that out.
Oh my god, that's so good.
But I do really enjoy that stuff.
Oh, like, me too.
The candid.
Fake doors!
Was it still a commercial?
Yeah.
Let's just see where this goes.
Okay, I got a shitload of quotes. I don't know what my best are.
Okay, just you start it off and I'll let you know when I'm close to being done.
Okay. Being a gangster was always better to me than being the president of the United States.
Some kid from the neighborhood carried my mother's groceries all the way home. You know why? It was out of respect.
Yep. Polly may have moved slow, but it's because he didn't have to move for anybody.
You wasted 8 fucking aprons on this guy. We gotta toughen this kid up.
They were suckers. They had no balls.
Everybody gets pinched, but you did it right.
Jimmy was the kind of guys who rooted for the bad guys in the movies. It's Jimmy the Gent.
Never rat on your friends, and always keep your mouth shut.
What am I, a schmuck on me on wheels?
I got that one too.
Yeah.
Take my wife, please. Pretty much that entire
old school. That was a Rodney Dangerfield set.
Yes.
For sure. There must have been 2 dozen Petey's and Polly's, and they were all married to Marie's with kids named Marie.
You're all Peter's, Paul's, and Mary's. You insulted him a little bit.
You're right away getting fucking fresh. Now go home and get your fucking shine box.
Let me dig a hole. I'll dig a fucking hole. Where are the shovels?
I'll pick up a shovel at the mother's house.
Let's chop him up.
Vinny, don't put too many onions in the sauce.
Among the Italians, it was real greaseball shit.
Don't make a jerk out of me.
I never voted. I never paid taxes.
I get to live my life like a schnook.
What the fuck is so funny about me?
Here, hide this.
We were good fellas. I love when a movie just says the title.
That's the Peter Griffin. I think of it every time because of that. Did you know that, what's so funny? You know, huh? Am I a funny guy? Funny how? That wasn't in the script.
Oh, no.
Pesci just ad-libbed that shit.
Oh, damn. That was a good bit.
Yeah.
Especially since he was, like, pulling a joke on him.
Yeah. Like... Yeah. And so that's why I think that Ray Liotta trying to get back into it, that must have been real. You know, that must have been him trying to vamp as the character, as an actor in the movie, and he's giving him this fucking funny bit.
Like, improvising. Mm-hmm. Like, no, just you're just funny. The way you tell, like...
You know, he's just a funny guy, you know?
And it's one of the most memorable scenes.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Which is, so it adds this little depth to the little piece there. Mm-hmm. It was just fun for me.
I did think it was super weird, bit of a tangent. Like, mm-hmm. Ray Liotta in all of the, like, when he's young and first killing it in the mob, that scene with Pesci, you think I'm funny or whatever. He looked so heavily made up, and his, like, laughter.
Liotta?
Yeah. Did that stand out to you at all? Like, see, the cackling that he was doing through so much of the early days?
Those are memes, dude. Those are GIFs you can get on your phone. If you search Ray Liotta as a GIF, you get those. And it's like, yo, you were early coked out in these scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of how that comes across.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder about Ray Liotta.
He's an interesting case study. This, to me, is the only movie where he really shines. Like, you look at his IMDb, all of
Give
his...
Give it to me.
Oh, I'm not going to give it to you. It's not a lot of stuff that you know about. Like,
really?
He definitely reprises the kind of gangster or the tough cop, you know, man in charge with a gun kind of roles. But, like, this was the one. And I always wondered that about him. I'm like, what happened? Like, why wasn't he, I don't know, any, like, rumors or scandals? I got no concept of what the man is like.
Me too.
But this movie, like, you know, when I watched it as a young man, it kicked ass. And I was always like, whatever happened to Ray Liotta? Like, why isn't he doing more awesome stuff like Goodfellas?
Yeah. He must have sucked as a person. I mean, I'm just, that's all I'm saying. It's like,
maybe just a hard to work with kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Val Kilmer. Mm. And weirdly, they kind of look alike.
Do you remember the guy who played Colonel Sanders in Spaceballs?
No.
I'm like way out there. Okay. Sir, we've never gone to Ludacris Street before. I don't know if she can handle it.
That's like, right. Okay.
That dude, like, was hilarious. But he was another one of those actors where I was like, you did this one awesome thing I remember from my childhood. Why weren't you in more stuff? You were hilarious.
You know, doing this exercise of going back with 90s movies, doing Stay Cool Forever, I'm starting to realize that so many of these 90s actors, and also watching Star Trek, so many people just went to doing voice acting.
Hmm.
A lot of people went straight to voice acting.
Ray Liotta did do some Grand Theft Auto voice acting.
Yes, that's what I was going to say, yeah. And so it's like, okay, so you're still within the realm and you're kind of typecast in this way, mm-hmm. but we're not making these movies anymore, but we're making video games like this.
Yeah.
Like Will Wheaton, for example, you know, Wesley Crusher. Mm-hmm. He hasn't fucking done anything, really. But he's done a shitload of voice acting. A whole shitload. And he even makes jokes that Hollywood forgot about him after The Next Generation to 2006. And I think maybe that's when one of those movies, one of those shows, like Firefly or something, was in the end of one of those.
I have no idea. Do you know if Will Wheaton's coming back for The Next Gen or for the Patrick Stewart?
Oh, the Picard show?
Yeah.
No, the only thing that we know is that Whoopi Goldberg's contacted CBS.
Oh, nice.
And she wants to come back. And she's an Elarian. Which means they live like 500 fucking years plus.
That's right. Yeah,
so she can totally be a part of it. Also, Data can totally come back. Because he's super into, you know, making it look like he's aged.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, so Data would like program himself to have grayer hair.
Yeah.
Or look like the actor does today.
He does in one of the last episodes of The Next Generation. He puts a gray patch in his hair because he thinks it makes him more distinguished as he's teaching at Oxford or some shit.
Ah.
And so because Brent Spiner himself has aged, mm-hmm. you can just say, oh, well, you know, Data wanted to make himself look older.
Well, sure. In Terminator Genesis, Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator had aged a bit as well because they're programmed to.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. They need Data in this new Picard show.
Oh, that would be amazing.
It would be just
watching you rewatch them. Mm-hmm. Data is really a joyful character.
He's the best.
Like, it's so great.
He's the best one. You know, what a paradox. But I digress.
As we do. Any like thoughts on this just in general?
This makes me just want to watch The Sopranos. I think I'm gonna start The Sopranos.
I never watched it.
Me either. I've seen the first season like 3 or 4 times.
Okay. I was trying to tell my wife, I'm like, I think this movie is kind of basically like The Sopranos, but just like the feature version.
They have the jail scene where they're cooking. That's like The Sopranos. There's a major portion of The Sopranos where they're getting the good shit, you know, and cooking in prison and shit.
That was pretty interesting. Just the whole social dynamic of the mob and the Italians. Like that idea that, well, for one, when important people go to jail, they get special treatment. They get hot plates.
Yeah.
Like they
get
to, you know, cut their garlic with a razor blade. So it liquefies. But even at the beginning when he was like, cops didn't look out for Italians, that's what the mob did. He, you know, it seemed kind of like just sort of an outsourcing of things that, you know, the American government wasn't doing for the
community. They filled a niche, for sure, of an immigrant class, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to open this door, but it's the same way when the Jews started moving to Palestine. They created their own militias, you know?
Yeah, you gotta, like, look out for your own if the government doesn't.
Exactly. You know, and that's what the mob did out here. You know, a bunch of Sicilians came out here, and they're like, have you ever met a Sicilian?
Have I?
Yeah.
Do we know any?
I know one. Simone is, like, best friend.
Okay, if I have, then okay. Probably not.
It was great. The first time I met him, his name's Giuseppe. And Simone goes, "This is Giuseppe. He's my best friend." And we're talking, and then Simone comes back, and he goes, "Watch out for him, okay? He's a Sicilian."
What the fuck?
And I'm like, oh, okay. And so it's just funny that I think there's this culture that is very tongue-in-cheek.
Mm.
It was real, but I don't think everyone from Sicily is involved in it, obviously.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of funny from an American standpoint when that gets, like, amalgamated into the party zeitgeist, you know, when you're just talking to people.
Maybe that's the equivalent of, like, you know, like an Irish person from Boston.
Yeah.
You know, it's like kind of like you can wink and laugh that, like, oh, look out, he's a hothead, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Stereotypes, but it's a little less harmful than outright racism.
Yeah, I agree. What about you? What is your...
I don't know. I really loved the directing. It was so busy and frantic, and the shots were moving, and the pacing and everything was really cool. I thought like the narration swap was a little weird, because like the narration in a lot of ways was expository.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't doing a ton for the viewer. It was just like, here's what we did. Here are the facts
of
our business operation.
In the third act, they break the fourth wall and shit, and it becomes like, oh wait.
Well, yeah, like at the very end, but then like the narration switches to Karen. Like in act two,
pretty early
or something. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, what's the story we're going to get with this girl?
And that's because she's in the witness protection program. That's the story. We're getting the story of it from them as the witnesses in the witness protection program.
But like the movie didn't make it obvious.
They didn't
like,
make that obvious at
where
all.
Where the narrators are coming from, what time period, how much do they know? Because there were even points where Ray Liotta narrating was like saying shit that later was then you got the full story of it.
What's it called? There's a writing thing, like the untrustworthy narrator.
Unreliable narrator.
And so you kind of get that effect.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also get to hear Karen's take on it, too.
Yeah.
Which you're to assume is a more reliable narrator. And then at the end, you're kind of like, oh, fuck, I don't know, because they're both in it at the end.
Yeah. I guess like that was the one thing that tied me up is who's the narrator, how reliable are they? And Karen, as I said, I watched it with my wife and she was like, oh, her character fucking sucked. Like you're teased with her as a narrator and you're getting a lot of her perspectives, but then at the end she just kind of serves the mob wife role of like, oh, I also got addicted to cocaine and like did what my husband wanted because I'm attracted to him, but like, didn't Paulie tell you you can't divorce him because you're a mob wife and you're not allowed?
It seems easy that she's like, I couldn't be more attracted to him.
There was a build-up and an opportunity, you know, and it just kind of didn't pay off. If I'm being nitpicky about just the narration stuff and Karen not reaching her potential for how she was set up in the movie.
I agree.
And the fourth wall break at the end. I don't care. I think that's a Scorsese thing.
I was Googling it afterwards. It apparently is just a Scorsese thing.
Like I'm sure Wolf of Wall Street did it. Where you just it's a little fun. I don't know if I don't know if I
it
need
fun,
it or if
yeah.
if it makes it better. But I can never hate on someone just doing some bold fucking directing choice of and now I'm gonna talk right at the camera and like walk around the courtroom and everyone else is gonna freeze and shut up because like here's the truth, man, I'm a bad guy. Let me lay it on you.
Yeah.
Eh.
Yeah, exactly. What you wanna do bands?
What do you got?
Okay. I've got Vasco Rossi in the Eja era.
Oh shit! You gotta explain this to me.
Yeah, so Vasco Rossi's the Italian Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
He's
rock and roll.
Rock and roll. Yeah.
Not roll, just rock.
Just rock. Super great dude, huge artist.
Mm-hmm.
I've met him. He's great. But the Eja era is when he's been at it for like 20 years, and so it's a little bit of a disconnect from like what's going on. It's a really interesting take on things, but it's not the truth, if that makes sense. And it's a really funny video.
Okay.
And I'll show it to you.
Please.
I'll show it to you. Yeah. And then I'll explain. Sorry, audience. There's things I can't say, but...
Real esoteric shit. Say it again so the listener can check it out.
Vasco Rossi, Eja. I don't know how to spell A, but Ja is G-I-A.
All right. Check that out. and make the connections and email us about it, because I'm sure I'm going to need
He's the Italian help. Bruce Springsteen.
Okay. Which, as we recall, David does not like Bruce Springsteen at all. Yes. That's what he rated Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh, yeah. Well, exclude David from this, then.
All right. My band for this is one of my favorite bands growing up, but when I revisit it, I'm like, it's a little shallow, it's a little juvenile, it's good, it's really slick and sharp at what it does, but the revisits as an adult are less inspired, is The Marvelous Three.
Oh.
Which you probably have never heard of.
I've never heard of that.
This was they were an underrated band. It's all really, like, party and drinking, fucking girls, and, like, just rock music, but for the late 90s.
Like a cherub of the late 90s.
Yeah. It's kind of like Lost in Time.
Interesting.
Very specifically.
Okay.
But with this movie, it's like, it's great as a piece of cinema, but like I said, I think it caters to a more juvenile sensibility.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's what I get.
Sure. Alternate title? Cocaine's a Hell of a Drug.
Bustin' Balls.
You know, better than mine.
The whole... No, I wouldn't say that. No, cocaine is a hell of a drug, and goddamn, these fucking gangster movies...
Goddamn!
Where there's just piles of cocaine, it's like...
I get anxiety watching movies like this.
That's why I tried it in the first place, because movies like this made it look so cool, and I'm done, I'm out of the game.
Me too.
But every time I see it, I'm just like, goddamn, why do movies make it look so fun?
They make it look cool. Dope. Like, even when they fall apart.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
When they're flushing heroin and crying about it and going to jail, it still always looks sexy. But no, stay out of drugs.
Yeah, don't do drugs, people.
Stay away from that cocaine.
All right.
It's a really overrated drug.
Yeah, it's very overrated. Don't do it. It's
fleeting high.
It's not cool.
So expensive.
Yeah.
Just smoke weed.
It's stupid. Yeah, just smoke weed.
Yeah.
It's legal in California. Yeah. You know, have a whiskey, smoke some weed, be all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well... That was Goodfellas.
Yeah.
What do you got?
No, did you have any, like, final thoughts? Like, for the listener, like, Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 96, 97, so this movie is, like, remembered.
Yeah, no, hell yeah. This movie does stand up. It stands the test of time. So, as I fucked up earlier, it's not Coppola, it's Scorsese, but Godfather 1, Godfather 2, Goodfellas, Casino, and Scarface. Those are fucking movies in this genre that are great.
Yeah.
They will always be good. And
they belong to that time, too.
Yes.
Like...
Yeah. And they tell that story perfectly. I'll never get enough of The Godfather. I've seen it 100 fucking times. The Godfather 2, I've seen 50 fucking times. And they're good. They're awesome. Goodfellas tells a different iteration of it.
Yeah.
And it's fun to be propped behind the curtain a little bit in this one. Because in Godfather, you're watching it. In this one, there's a little bit of curtain drawing, and you get to see, like, kind of what's going on.
Yeah, and you got the narrator taking you through
exactly. it. Yeah, exactly. And so it's an interesting take on it. It does stand the test of time. I would for sure watch it. Dances with Wolves, I think, was actually better.
Probably, and I hope we can get around to that
sooner
or later.
Yeah, an extended Western run.
Yeah, no, this was, like, really fun as a piece of cinema. There's so much interesting stuff happening. You're not going to get bored watching it, but just, if you do decide to watch it, and I'd say, yeah, watch it, but you're going to be watching a movie about bad guys.
Yeah.
So if you're, like, a little too sensitive to get on board with that, maybe it's not for you. But if you can enjoy a little nihilism, a little danger, some fucking... hyper-violence.
Some fucking hyper-violence.
Get out of here.
There was only 5 murders in the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you name them?
No.
Maury.
Maury, for sure. The Jimmy Bats.
Bats.
I think
the waiter kid who he shot in the foot.
The waiter
kid
he shot in the foot.
Load.
Pesci got killed. And the fifth eludes me. That's for the listener to find out.
Okay, yeah. What was the fifth murder? Let us know at staycoolforever.com. I mean, @gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Yeah. And thank you guys for listening. I'm Zach.
I'm Wade.
And you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Overcast, Windows Media Player, Bose, YouTube. Send us an email, staycoolforever@gmail, FOUR, Twitter, LAZacharyK, eventually, staycoolforever@twitter.com.
And stay tuned next week when we're gonna do...
Pulp Fiction!
Yeah, we're gonna end the famous Oscar director worthy. Oscar shit on a fun note.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.